Honourable members, can we get back to our meeting by requesting Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate to address us? Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable members, and good morning once again. Our presentation will be on the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate annual report for 2009 and 2010. But what we have done is that we've also included the trends for last year and this year, just to give you the picture on how are we performing as an industry. And we also included some topical issues. Some of them have been covered in the media, and they will just indicate to you what are we how are we dealing with those as well. In terms of the purpose of the inspectorate, is to execute the department's mandate to safeguard the health and safety of the mine employees and people affected by mining activities. And our objective is to reduce the mining-related deaths, injuries, ill health, through the formulation of national policy and legislation, the provision of advice, and the application of systems that monitor, auditor, and...
Honourable Sondo, can I ask you, there's an urgent matter that I must attend to come here, please. Please continue.
Okay. And also the application of systems that monitor, audit, and enforce compliance in the mining sector. We thought that it's very, very critical that we clearly give you the profile of the current persons at work statistics at our mines between the period 2002 and 2010. If you look at the slides that are provided, the trend line in purple is for the total. The one in red is for the gold sector. And the one in green is for the platinum sector. The blue one is for the other. And lastly, the black one is for the coal sector. If you look at the statistics, the table just below the graph, it will clearly show that the total number of people that were at work during 2010 was about 476,000 people. And then if you look at 2002, it was about 387,000 people that were employed. But now, I think what's very interesting is that if you compare between 2002 and 2008, you can see that there's been a 32% increase in the total number of people that have been employed, to a figure of about 512 in 2008, as indicated there. And with the platinum sector, between the same period, there's been close to about 100% increase in the number of people that have been employed, in the industry, from about 94,000 to about 187,000. So there's been a growth in terms of the number of mines and operations, especially between the northwest and the Limpopo area, along the Bushveld complex. And I think it's also important to also indicate that within the coal sector as well, there's been an increase of about 35% from about 46,000 to about 62,000 in 2010. And the same increase goes for the other sector, which had about 60% improvement. But it's worth noting to indicate that during the same period, the number of people employed in the coal sector contracted by about 13%. Okay? But I'd like to emphasize that during that period, a substantial number of them have moved to the platinum sector and the other sectors because of the skills that they possess. Because if you look at the platinum sector and like the other sectors, you'll find that they use the same mining methods. So you'll find that they will move towards those particular sectors. But I also included this slide just to link it to the health and safety aspect of it. If you look within the platinum sector, that growth that I've indicated of about 100%, what happened is that people who never worked at the mines mainly were employed by those mines that opened along the Bushveld complex. And I think with us, we realized that it came with the challenge of health and safety, in the sense that new people who were never exposed to risks now have to work in mines. So you'll find that the substantial number of accidents involve people with less experience in the mines during this particular period. So we have, throughout the course of that period, attempted, and we've been striving to ensure that there are appropriate training and induction programs in place to assist with that. And the other thing that with the platinum sector is that there's been a substantial number of greenfield projects, that is new mining projects. So they will use the contractors to assist them with the construction of the mine. It also brought some challenges, and you'll see that some accidents also involved contractors, especially with the medical surveillance. We'll find that in certain instances it was not done appropriately. So our programs, as well as the inspectorate, moving forward, was to make to always also make sure that contractor management is done effectively, especially when it comes to the issues of health and safety. The coal sector, we've also seen a number of them, as indicated by the number of people employed. But with the coal sector, what we've seen is we've seen a lot of small open pit mines opening up. And again, with those as well, there's been contractors that have been employed, and they are bringing new employees, and there's been health and safety challenges that we had to deal with moving forward. But I thought that it's very important that I show you this slide and link it to the work that we do. The issue of movement from the gold miners to the platinum sector, I'll also touch on it when we do the health aspect of it. This slide is also an interesting one. It basically shows the commodity prices of the platinum and the gold for the period 1999 to the end of 2010. I think I must indicate that for the period 2001 and between the period 2001 and 10, there has been an increase of about 414% in the gold price. And I think last year the gold price has struck a record price. The same increase, almost 287%, was seen for the same period with the platinum sector. But you'll see the platinum sector is indicated with blue, and gold with the other color. In 2008, mid 2008, there was a recession, a global recession. It heavily affected the platinum price and the platinum sector. There's been a substantial number of people that have been retrenched as a result within the platinum sector. However, you can actually see that even during that period, the gold price really increased. And I think the gold price during that time was a safe haven for investors, especially with the problem with the strength of the dollar as well. They will take their investments into the gold sectors, or buying of gold. But I think it's also it's important for me to indicate that between 2009 and 10, for both sectors or price commodities, we've seen an increase of about 45% and 48% respectively for gold and platinum. So I think that we believe that there will still be growth within the industry. Some mines, Anglo-American indicated that they'll be investing close to 112 billion rands moving forward, employs about 32 billion rands moving forward. So we think that there'll be an increase in the operations and the number of people employed moving forward. And also with Nkwe Mining, they indicated that the Chinese are going to invest about 6 billion into the company. I think that this is positive, especially with the call from the state president that there should be job creation moving forward. But now, linking it to health and safety again, we have seen, especially with the gold sector, historically, the gold sector has been one of the sectors that's been started, where mining started, and the number of reserves are diminishing. So hence, the mines now, some of the mines are going deeper to access the reserves, but some of the mines, what they are currently doing, or they're planning to do is to access sharp pillars and remnant pillars. And there's health and safety issues that goes with it. Especially going deeper, there might be challenges of seismicity. mining remnant pillars or shaft pillars as well, there might be challenges of seismicity, and there might be challenges of heat, people being exposed to heat. So I think with the work that we do, these are the factors that we consider moving forward. The same with the rise in the platinum sector. There will be a, you know, employment of new people within the sector as well. So with the work that we do, we'll look at those and also the contractors that are being employed to make sure that they there's compliance with the Mine Health and Safety Act. Again, recently our Minister of Treasury, Pravin Gordhan, indicated that there's been about 808 billion rand that has been allocated for infrastructure moving forward. And I think it's a positive move, especially in the regions where we believe that there's a lot of mining, Northern Cape in terms of manganese, Northwest in terms of platinum, Limpopo in terms of coal and platinum as well, and Mpumalanga in terms of coal. We think it's a positive move. And what we believe will happen is that we'll now see an increase in the production, especially with the brickworks, manganese mines, sandworks, cementworks, because they will be feeding material to the mines or even Eskom in terms of the power station for constructing of that infrastructure. But the challenges that we foresee as well in terms of health and safety is that some of these mines, they don't necessarily have health and safety management systems. I think moving forward, our drive is to make sure that they have an appropriate health and safety management systems to prevent harm to the mine employees. In terms of occupational health, health issues are more different from safety issues because of the latency effect of it. And it has been indicated through the studies that have been done previously that the number of people killed by respiratory diseases, although it's not in your face, is 4 times those killed by the mine accident because it's over a long, long time period. So we should, our approach is that we should have a balanced approach in terms of health and safety to make sure that we reverse the status quo. This slide shows the occupational diseases. These diseases, we are data, we acquire them from the annual medical reports that are submitted each and every year by the mines, and then we do the analysis of those. Just to assist with the abbreviations, NIHL is the noise induced hearing loss, SIL is silicosis, ASB is asbestosis, PTB is pulmonary TB, SITB is silicone TB, PN is coal workers pneumoconiosis, and OTH is other diseases. But I think what is prominent from this particular slide is that most of the diseases that are being reported by all the mines are the pulmonary-related TB, although there's been some slight improvement regarding that, but the most of the diseases that have been reported are the pulmonary TB cases, followed by noise-induced hearing loss, though there's been about a 6% improvement there, and an improvement in silicosis. I think those are the ones that are being required. I think it's also of importance for me to emphasize that we still have asbestosis cases that are being reported, although our asbestos mine stopped operating about 20 years ago. I think this is a latency effect that I was talking about, that, you know, of exposure to dust or noise that we are dealing with moving forward. The same profile for the gold sector, as you can really see there. Most of the cases being reported is pulmonary TB. There has been some improvement or reduction in terms of the number of cases that are being reported moving forward. And again, the platinum sector as well. It would be of interest for me just to indicate why the increase in silicosis there and PTB, pulmonary TB for both at the platinum sector. This was because of previously the platinum sector were of the view that they don't have silica in their mines. So their employees will not acquire silicosis. The same thing with TB, because some of the TB is related to exposure to silica dust, or parts dust. So I think the increase was really mainly because we said to them they have to report, because at least it gives us an impression of the total view in terms of the diseases that are being reported. Hence, you can actually see the doubling. And most of the cases really are people who came from the gold mines now who are working in the platinum sector. And for the coal mines, the same, I think it's almost a similar profile where you see there's pulmonary TB cases which are more prominent, but there's been some reduction. And with the noise-induced hearing loss, there's been an increase. I think the increase, it was mainly because of us revealing in some of the mines that we're not reporting in terms of the law, but we took the necessary actions to rectify that. With the other mines, like, again, it appears that most of the cases that have been reported in this case has been noise-induced hearing loss. This slide shows the milestone target for respirable crystalline silica. I think in 2003, all state tripartite stakeholders, ourselves as a state, the owners of mines, and the organized labor came together through the Mine Health and Safety Council, and in a summit that was arranged last year, we agreed during that time on what we call the health and safety milestones. The health milestones then that we agreed upon was that by the year 2013, we should eliminate noise-induced hearing loss and silicosis. Okay? We should actually take the necessary steps to ensure that by 2013, we should eliminate noise-induced hearing loss and silicosis. And on safety side, we've agreed that by the year 2013, we must compare favorably with the mines, with the countries that are doing well in terms of safety. That is Canada, Australia, and the USA are moving forward. But this slide basically shows the target that we've agreed that the mines, in terms of the silica, should achieve by the same period. 75% a target that has been set. It basically shows the performance of each and every region, in the mines in each and every region. Gauteng, GP, Northwest, Free State, Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Western Cape, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and South Africa as a whole for the past 3 years, between 2007 and 2009. As you can really see, there has been some few mines in the regions indicated that have achieved. But generally, all our mines, they've been achieving about 90% from the target that has been really set moving forward. But I think I must also indicate that there have been challenges that we have revealed in terms of reporting of the data accurately. The sampling processes that has been adopted by some of the mines, those are the issues that we have identified as an inspectorate, because some of the data does not look accurate. So, but this really show you an indication on where we are generally as the mines. And in terms of safety, this particular slide shows the fatality rate per million hours worked for the period January 2008 to 2009. I think. And the top line basically is for the gold sector, and this one is for the diamond sector, and the red one is for platinum. The blue is coal, and then the green is for the other sector. I think you can really see that between the two years, there's been some improvement from this particular side. But in terms of the data itself, for the period, if you compare 2008 and 2009, number of deaths improved from 168, actually from 171 to 168 in 2009. There's been a 2% improvement there. And most of the improvement was with the coal sector, 10%, the gold sector, 5%, and the other sector, 7%. Okay? In 2008, we had about 30% reduction in the fatality rates. However, we could not actually match the same for 2009. As earlier on, I indicated that there has been a recession which affected the mining operations. There's been about 36,000 people who have retrenched because of that of the recession. And from our experience when engaging with the management, we had a sense that a lot of people have been retrenched. You'll find maybe one supervisor being responsible for now a bigger area compared to previously. One mine manager responsible for, let's say, more than three shafts but previously it was not the same because of the recession. And the same, I think what we've also realized that the mindset changed and the morale changed. People were no longer focusing on health and safety. Now they are focusing on economic related issues, on how are we keeping the mine to be alive because of the recession. I think those are the things that we have learned during the recession. And I think it goes for the injuries as well. As you can really see there, most of the improvement was with the coal sector with 9% and the coal sector with 11%. And incidentally, I must say that you will actually see from these two slides, deaths and the injury rates, that the sectors that have been heavily affected by the recession had the worst performance in terms of safety. That is the platinum and the other. Under the other, mainly the diamond industry, because they had a huge retrenchment during that particular period as well. And the occupational safety, I thought it's very important that we must also indicate for the period 2009 and 2010. In terms of that period, we had a 24% improvement. And with last year being experiencing the lowest fatality rates ever, a number of people killed ever. But I think, as the department and our minister, we are really still greatly concerned with the number of people or with the loss of life still at our mines. And we will indicate what steps are we taking to really to change the profile that we are showing. But you can really see from on all the sectors that there has been some improvement, mainly with the coal, other sectors as well, as indicated on that particular slide. The same with the injuries there, the improvements are clearly indicated. However, this year, I must indicate that unfortunately we had a bad start, especially in January. You know, we're having sometimes a challenge with complacency within the industry. I must indicate that one of our mines, of the mining groups that have been performing well is Anglo Thermal Coal. For the first time ever, they went through 2010 without a fatality, ever. It never actually happened. And the other year almost achieved a similar thing. And DRD, they have gold mines. I mean, more gold mines are more riskier than the coal mines. But, I mean, you can see that there's been really an improvement there. But unfortunately, the Anglo Thermal Coal, they experienced an accident in January where there was a fatality. So I think for us, this slide and the current profile clearly shows that you cannot relax with safety. You have to continuously, you know, working on it. But I'll also indicate later on what steps are we taking to change the current profile. However, I must indicate that with the injuries, we had close to about 40% improvement for the period 1st of January to the 14th of March this year compared to last year. We had a significant improvement, mainly with the platinum sector there, which experienced about 54% improvement. In terms of the performance, in terms of our annual report for 2009 and 10, I've summarized our achievements, and I'll end up with the challenges as well. In terms of challenge of achievements, we've managed to hold the meetings with the respective stakeholders, because for us, we think that it's the most important or enforcement approach that we can take to share information on health and safety with our relevant stakeholders. We normally have meetings with our unions and mine management just to tell them where our serious issues. We'll share similar information that I've indicated to you, and we'll request them to assist us in focusing with their respective areas. And I think during this engagement, we'll also say what are the probable best practices that they could consider to improve, to have a significant improvement on the current status quo. We also engage with our counterparts in the Department of Labor, Department of Health, and the Director of Public Prosecution. With the Department of Labor, we have an MOU or a memorandum of understanding between ourselves that in areas that we have expertise, that is mining, we will assist. And the same thing with them. In areas that they have expertise, then they will definitely assist. I'll make an example with the Gautrain. During that period, as you can still consider, there was a Gautrain that has been constructed, tunnels that have been constructed, and the route that has been constructed to support the Gautrain. Where the Gautrain route went underground, the Mine Health and Safety Act took effect. So we as the inspectorate assisted in ensuring compliance with the provisions of the law in terms of the health and safety. But where it went on surface, then the OSH Act, which is enforced by the Department of Labor, took effect, and then we engaged. And I think it's not only those, but there's several of them that we work together to improve on health and safety. And in terms of addressing health and safety risks, we completed our inquiries and investigations display, and in our audits we have achieved 83%, and inspections 91%. Development of guidelines, we've reviewed the existing guidelines and developed the new guidelines as indicated there. As example, the first one is underwater mining, the other one is emergency preparedness, and the last one is the draw points, tipping points, and all passes. I think it's very important that to highlight the fact that the emergency preparedness one will also assist the mines to respond effectively, or to have systems that will assist them to respond effectively during emergencies. You can still recall that we had 33 miners trapped in Chile for 69 days, and we believe that this guideline and the provisions of the law where it says that they must have secondary outlets or two shafts in case of an emergency to assist the employees will definitely assist the mines. And in terms of the review and development of internal policies and procedures, we have developed those policies indicated there, exams policy, the medical appeal procedure, inclusion of non-inclusion of fatal accidents in statistics. And lastly, in that slide, is the human resource development. We continuously send our inspectors. We continuously identify the training needs for inspectors to improve the way we do our business and efficiency in the way we do our business as well as inspectorate. As you can see, there were 99 officials who completed a course on risk management in mining, which we think is very, very critical, during that same period, and there were about 97 officials who completed the health and safety training, mainly on legal, inspection, audit, investigation, and inquiries related matters. I think this will clearly assist us in enhancing quality in the main activities that we do as inspectors. Challenges. One of the challenges that we have is the capacity within the inspectorate, and I'll just touch on what we are doing in terms of that. Our complement as the inspectorate total, head office and regions, we have about 316 posts, right? But for that, for the reporting period 2009 and 10, we had 278 people filling those posts, and we had 38 vacancies during that particular period. I think the other challenge is that some of our inspectors might be going on retirement soon. So we should be able to be putting the necessary measures to replace them. And again, we have Northwest Region as it's actually the biggest region in South Africa in terms of number of people employed, close to about 200,000 people employed in Northwest. But we only had one office, which is located in Klerksdorp, and we also had a satellite office in Rustenburg. And 1P principal inspector, for instance, looking over the entire region. So what we are doing as well is to split the region into two, and we are looking at appointing 2 PIs, one in Rustenburg and one in Klerksdorp, to have a better focus. But I think just to deal with the issues of capacity, we've appointed 19 learner inspectors. What we've done, I think in 2007, 2006, that period, we put an advert in the newspaper to get people with diplomas or degrees in mining, electrical, or mechanical engineering. Our intention was to assist them in acquiring practical experience. Okay, we had a service level agreement with Bolsters where we put them there for 2 years, and then we placed them within the inspectorate for 2 years in 2009. And that also assisted us in dealing with our vacancy rate. Because before that, our vacancy or our turnover rate was about 30%. Now, our vacancy rate is about 16%, you know. And we've also issued about 18 bursaries to students. We have a budget of about 1.5 million rands that we allocate to issue bursaries. And once they finish at school, we also place them through the same process. We put them at for practical experience, and we put them and we adopt them within the regional offices. We also work together with the MQA in terms of skills development within the expert trade and within the industry. We work together with VET and MQA, as I indicated, and ERCA, just to enhance, our capacity and training levels. We've previously spoken about the SAMHSA system. We also use that system to keep any documents or any procedures and policies that have to do with the health and safety. It can be the Minor Health and Safety Act, you'll find it there. It can be the necessary guidelines on prevention of explosions, workforce, you'll really find it there. It's sort of a one-stop shop for inspectors. I mean, what it will do is that if an inspector wants a procedure on, let's say, on inspection, he can just go into that system and quickly look at what is required for him to do an effective inspection. I think that system, although we are finalizing the development, we believe that it will assist us moving forward to enhance the quality of work. And I think the last point also speaks to that as well. With the fall of ground accidents, I've clearly indicated before that we had some improvement, but I think our main challenge is that a substantial number of accidents are repeat accidents, are similar, basically. You know, fall of ground accidents, I mean, if you look at the causes, let's say they didn't support adequately, or they didn't follow a mine standard, or the mine design was not appropriate. Those are the issues that we are grappling with moving forward. But I also touch open about this, what we are really doing to change the attitude with it. I must indicate that between 2009 and 10, there's been a 60% drop in the number of people that have been killed by rock bursts or seismic-related accidents. I think it's a significant one. Previously, most of the time we'll report that we had a lot, but I think it's been a while since we had a rock burst-related fatality, touchwood. And at the fall of ground, there's been a 20% improvement within the same period as well. However, we're still concerned with the high number of people killed and number of people killed as a result of fall of ground accidents. So in reaction to that, through the Mine Health and Safety Council, SIMREC, we agreed with the other stakeholders that there should be a research project in conjunction with Council for Geoscience. It's a 16 million rand project per year for the first year that is. Basically what we'll do, it will look at integrating the seismic networks, the national one and the mines one. Basically the CGS, or Council for Geoscience, runs the national one, and the mines, they have their own that they run, really. And normally what they will do, they will just analyze the data and respond accordingly to prevent serious seismicity or rock bursts at the mine. So what we foresee moving forward, the CGS might act as a one-stop shop where we will get that data as the inspectorate or the department from CGS. We'll go to CGS or we'll have an agreement with them that periodically they'll have to give us data on what are the trends like in terms of seismicity, where the problem areas are. Because currently we know that most of the challenges are within the Cartonville area because there are more deeper coal mines than the other type of areas. And we expect that in future probably we'll have seismicity in the platinum sector because they'll be going deeper as well. So we're encouraging that they also should have the seismic monitoring networks to be put on that particular grid, which will be managed centrally. Last year, our minister had a meeting with the CEOs of the platinum mines after the accident at Aquarius Platinum at Marikana, where five people were killed. And there was a resolution taken then that there should be a task team formed, made of specialists, to look at the problems of fall of ground that happened, especially with the bord and pillar mining. That task team was formed under the Mine Health and Safety Council. I'm happy to report that they've compiled a report. That report will send it to the CEOs for their comments before we are going to have a meeting again with the minister and the unions to discuss the outcome of the work that the task team has undertaken. And lastly, our minister on that particular slide has called for the restructuring of our department, including the inspectorate. Given I've indicated to you that the commodity prices are increased, we expect, I think we are very bullish, we expect that there will be a boom in South Africa in mining. So the call was for us to really to capacitate each and every branch to support the boom in the regions, especially the bigger regions, as I indicated. But I think for us, because most of the accidents that we experience are fall-of-ground accidents, we are also looking at appointing rock engineers at regional level as well, especially those regions that have gold, platinum, you know, mines, and coal mines as well. We are looking at appointing rock engineers, although we do have one post for rock engineer in head office as well. But that, we believe that it's better to have one at closer to the mine. And in terms of health, health, as indicated, is still a challenge for us as an industry. What we have done during that period, we have reviewed the TB guideline. I've indicated that most of the diseases that have been reported are related to pulmonary TB. So we have reviewed the guideline to be in line with the Department of Health policies on how mines should respond to TB, and to ensure that you don't treat TB in isolation from HIV and AIDS. So when you look at TB as well, you must also look it in line with the HIV and AIDS programs that you have in place. And I think this will also assist us to try and bring the TB cases further down. And there's been a task team that has been formed by the Department of Health and ourselves, the Department of Labor and Home Affairs Department. As you might know, that the labor sending areas include Lesotho and Mozambique. So that task team will actually look at how can we also assist countries like Lesotho and Mozambique with the assistance of the mines to make sure that we effectively deal with the issue of TB. Our minister has also called for a survey to be done on HIV and AIDS, TB in the industry. We've acquired the services of National Institute of Professional Health, which have done the survey for us, and they have drafted a report which is going to be discussed shortly with the principals from the other stakeholders. And we are planning to have an HIV summit, an HIV AIDS TB summit during this year to discuss the outcome of that particular survey. I think the challenge that we have is that we know that each mining company, what is the status, for instance, in HIV and AIDS. We can say Anglo-Plat, for example, maybe they have 10% of their total workforce are positive, but we are not in a position to say overall what is the state in the particular industry. So we believe that study will really assist us in knowing the status, and then together with the other two stakeholders, then we agree on the way forward on how we deal with this this question. And we also established a chief directorate on health and safe health. We are going to hold interviews for the chief director post and the director post on occupational medicine and occupational hygiene within the next 2 weeks, to capacitate that unit effectively. And lastly, on that particular slide, together with the Mine Health and Safety Council, we embarked on silicosis roadshows to really to improve awareness in terms of this. And I think during those roadshows, it became clear to us that employees really don't understand what is the impact or the consequences of exposure to dust, you know, or of using PPEs effectively, or taking the necessary steps to prevent exposure to dust. And I think they really appreciated and understood why we should really take the necessary measures, because they prevent them suffering from occupational diseases. And lastly, my principals, I'll just talk on the topical issues. You might be aware that there's been a landmark constitutional court ruling on the claims by Mr. Winston Mankai for damages against Anglo Gold Ashanti for occupational diseases. Unfortunately and regrettably, Mr. Mankai passed away about 2 weeks ago, three weeks ago, before the ruling. And as as the department, we would like to express our condolences in this particular case, not only for him, but all the people who have also lost their lives in terms of health and safety. But I think for us, this case really is a clear indication of the legacies of the past that we are still dealing with, in terms of people who have been exposed to dangerous health and safety conditions, and now they are being precipitated with the occupational diseases, as indicated with a particular slide. And it also is clearly an indication of the shortcomings within the previous legislations that we had, especially with the occupational exposure limits. They were not really, you know, controlling to make sure that these are the ones that the mine should really abide by. But with the introduction of the Mine Health and Safety Act, it's now clear that what is the level of OEL. For instance, for silica, it's indicated about 0.01. milligrams per meter cubed. And again, I think it also, this case also speaks to issues of compensation. If you follow this matter, his complaint was he was paid about 16,000 rand, and he worked for Anglo Gold for about 15 years, and when he was retrenched because of his ill health, they gave him 16,000 rand. And I think if he went to court claiming about 2.5 million rand. So I think there's issue of compensation that are being dealt with as well, obviously through the Department of Labor. We are aware that, and they are involving ourselves to review the previous legislation, because it's an old legislation that deals with this. But I think within the industry as well, through the other stakeholders and through the council, there has been a drive since the promulgation of the Mine Health and Safety Act to prevent exposure to silica and noise-induced hearing loss. As I indicated, even in 2003, we agreed on those milestones of eliminating silicosis and noise-induced hearing loss. And through the council, there is research that has also been done, or that has been done, on silicosis, TB, and noise-induced hearing loss, and what steps should be taken to prevent exposure by the mine. And I think this school will also be used as best practice moving forward. We have agreed with the council as well that during the next board meeting, we will discuss this ruling and the implications to the industry about on this particular ruling. And I must also indicate that on our Mine Health and Safety Council board, the compensation commissioner has been invited, now he's a full member of the board, ready for us to really to discuss continuously the issue of compensation. So they have been requested to come and do a presentation during the next board meeting, and it will spark discussions on how we take this matter forward and advise our principals in terms of the ministry and probably yourselves on how we should really deal with this. The next item on this particular slide is that for the first time we've also written letters to the board members, actually to the board, to the chairpersons of the mining board. We believe that for us to have a significant sustainable improvement on health and safety, everyone should be involved. We should get a perspective of everyone, from the top to the bottom of the hierarchy within the industry. And these letters, we've written them when the industry was really performing well, last year, December. We were basically saying in the letters that although we acknowledge and appreciate the improvement, some of the mines have had a 50% reduction, 30% reduction in fatality. So we say, although we acknowledge it, we're still concerned with the loss of life within the industry, especially because of the same thing. Fall of ground, people being run down by machines, health-related matters as silicosis, noise-induced hearing loss. So I think this is what we were saying in that particular letter. And we're further saying that to us it appears if we are not learning from our experiences. And there's best work that has been done through research, and some people are reluctant to adopt it. And we are saying we should really work together on this particular matter. And the board, we've also indicated in that letter that they have to report periodically to the department on what steps they are taking to have a significant improvement on health and safety. Subsequent to the letters, we have seen some of the mining groups have been restructuring. They've changed general managers, they've changed mine managers, probably because of, you know, the pressure from above as well. Obviously, it's an unfortunate thing, but I think it's very, very important that we have to change the attitude in the industry. Some of the mines have, CEOs have also written letters to their chief general managers to the effect that if you have fatalities or if you have Section 54 instructions that you have been issued at your mines, you must consider resigning. We don't want to get people dismissed, but we believe that it's not acceptable that people should die at our mines if we can do something about it. And I think that's the drive that we are pushing. And what we've been saying to the CEOs as well recently, we've been having meetings with them. We were saying that we are not saying they don't care about their people, right? But it's about time that they should be extremely visible at the mines. People, they should see that they really, really care and talk. They should not be seen only when there's production issues that have to be dealt with, but when there's health and safety issues. I mean, if there's a fatality, they must also go down. I mean, they must stop what they are doing and go to the mine. It's not happening as it should be currently, we must say. And it's a great concern. And we were saying to them that it's not acceptable because the death of a person is really a serious, if you look at the implications to their families and friends and the country as well. So we are driving that moving forward. The next item on that slide is that the health and safety issues have been included for the first time in the reviewed mining charter. Previously, the first mining charter did not have this, but now they are included in the mining charter. The mines are now required on an annual basis to report to the department on the performance, also on health and safety. So I think it's a positive move for moving forward. Lastly, on that particular slide is a review of the Mine Health and Safety Act. We are currently, through the call of our minister, we are reviewing the Mine Health and Safety Act to strengthen some of the shortfalls that we had, and also to bring forward some of the issues that we brought here, especially Section 86 and Section 57, to also to include them in this particular slide. So, Honorable Chairperson, members, thank you. This was the presentation from our side, as I expected.
Thank you very much, Inspector. Members, that is the presentation as put before you, with an understanding that time is against us. I'm giving you a few minutes to engage. I recognize Honorable Matsivela, Honorable Kololo, Honorable Smith, and Honorable Bikani, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson.
After the accident they had, and where they had that to show that
we've got this one here and so forth. It's still there. And when we asked about that rock, they said it is the contractor, which means the mine owner doesn't take responsibility, and those people are bringing the same production out. That mine is gaining more with the contractors. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've got a few questions and a comment. The first one actually will be on the open cast mines. As to what is the state of affairs regarding the open cast mines in terms of accidents and occupational diseases? Is it prevalent as compared to the deep mining? The second one will be on the trainees that underwent the courses. You mentioned that there were about 99. How many passed, how many failed? Because I don't think they passed all of them. The comments now. I'm happy to hear that there is a summit that will take place very soon that will be addressing the question of HIV and occupational diseases. On the topical issues, we as a committee, I think, would like to convey our deepest condolences on the passing away of Mr. Winston Mankai. Maybe the last one, actually, will be on the work statistics in all sectors in the mining sector. If you could finish us maybe with the breakdown as to how many were foreign, how many were South Africans, on the ones that who died in the mines. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two issues. One figure that jumps out to you is the occupational diseases at the gold mines, the pulmonary tuberculosis. Now, it's been said, and I'm not sure whether it's said, but that figure is extraordinarily high when compared to other figures, because of HIV and AIDS and the susceptibility of people suffering with HIV AIDS to contract pulmonary TB. Just confirmation was that so, because then there seems to be other issues at play rather than mining and the contribution of mining to that particular figure. Then secondly, I see that you've concentrated on contractors. Contractors, their figures, I take it, are included in these figures which you give. And then secondly, a very, very valid note, and it's not my clear thinking, a note by a parliamentary researcher basically which goes as follows, and he says, does the statistics reflect the number of employees living with these diseases or the new infections recorded in the reporting period? In other words, all people who are infected, or is it only those who have been reported in that period? If it reflects the former, can the disease in numbers be attributed to termination of employment as a result of incapacity due to ill health? I can't put it better than that. Okay. Thanks.
The challenge with that question is that it's not coming from them, but it's the knowledge you have. They will see how they will get around it.
Thank you, Chair. My question is just basically based on the way the graphs have been presented to us in relation to the various diseases that are profiled here. To say the issue of pulmonary TB seems to be evidently the biggest problem. I don't know if it's because of the numbers, which is also possible, the number of affected people, versus the number of affected people with the other diseases, or the fact that you mentioned that it's related to HIV and AIDS. Is there not time that you should start splitting pulmonary TB and HIV and AIDS? My basis being that pulmonary TB is a curable disease. Steps to that indicate that if TB is treated and cured, the problem is solved. It might not be the same for HIV and AIDS. So the approach perhaps needs to be changed in terms of the way you present the statistics, in the way you do your research, or in the way you actually test your people to get an indication of what is the critical. Because even at the end of the day, if a person is suffering from HIV and AIDS, you're going to treat that person differently from a person who's solely being treated for pulmonary TB. And at the end of the day, if it's a combination of both, one of the two is sometimes resolved, which is mainly pulmonary TB. So I think for us to get a true reflection of the exact steps and the status of in particular pulmonary TB, which was there way before we talked about HIV and AIDS, should perhaps portray differently. That's my suggestion. Then the issue of the hospitals, I remember that, especially in Carltonville, I know that there's normally buildings standing there, good buildings of actual hospitals or clinics that are within the premises of a mining company. Not much is being said about that, and I think that also in previous years we have iterated the fact that it would be interesting to know the state of those hospitals and what are the plans, especially from DMR in particular, in maintaining those hospitals, in actually understanding if there's staffing, if there's treatment, if there's relevant work being done to the patients who are actually within the hospital, including the issue that Matibe just mentioned in relation to the families that are staying within the premises of mines, within the households. Obviously, they'll make use of those clinics. There's absolutely nothing going on in relation to what is the state of hospitals. If it means partnering with Department of Health to get detailed stats and understanding of what is happening around hospitals, because I'm sure there's a budget involved around that. And there's also the very legislation that is involved in terms of how those hospitals should be operated, as well as the occupational clinics that are there. The other issue is the mental and skills development. Okay, we just managed to get a book on time, I suppose, the annual report, and I suppose it will also be mainly referring to DMR. But at the end of the day, there's also not much detail of the different types of relevant training that need to be portrayed in terms of your reporting, including yourself, mine health and safety. And you can't tell me that the training involved is what you have reflected here only. There are other areas of skills development that might need to be included, because my worry is that there's a particular level of people who are portrayed here and the rest of the laborers are left out, so it doesn't give an impression that there's even training within to improve skills of mine workers. That also, I think, Chairperson, if you could even have an opportunity where DMR actually brings up their HRM, Human Resource Management and Development Sector, to come and give us a detailed presentation, the budget allocation, the programs they have in place, and where there's been an skills audits done, which will, of course, include mine health and safety. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Because I'm an acting chairperson currently, the time now is 3 minutes to 1 o'clock. We're supposed to be out here, and you are saying, members, that the entity should respond to your questions. Give me a direction.
Chairperson, can I add? They'll decide if they'll answer. The issue of the... Sorry, Chairperson, can I add?
What are you adding now?
I think they can answer some of our questions.
No, speak to what I'm requesting of you.
We can sit and do quarter past, Chair. Quarter past that first.
Quarter past.
Quarter past. But I've got an additional question.
No. There's another entity that needs to be giving a presentation here. Yes. MQA. Hululu.
Thank you very much. I'll propose that they don't respond today. Let's maybe give the other entity that 15 minutes. Then next time we do like what we did today, when we have our next meeting, maybe we can
How's that proposal?
Mr. Chair, that's why I'm in the opposition, to disagree with. I would rather propose that we finalise the Mining Health and Safety Council and that the MQA come back, because it doesn't help if it's two groups of people coming back. Rather finalise the one and let the other group come back on the next meeting.
Chairperson, I think it will also have to be on the committee section side to sometimes be assertive, because there's been expense from the guys coming down here from the department for them to be turning back. If an issue has occurred like it has earlier, where you find a group that has to come and re-represent, we should be considerate of the fact that you might run out of time. I mean, we're used to that by now. And make other arrangements already beforehand, because they're going to have to come back again on other expense, whether it is they could have been stopped if it was a case that you have to finish off some other work. I say we go.
Okay, you got the agenda, the agendas, the notices. They were saying we start at 9 and we finish at 2. So, Mine Health and Safety respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. Just to start off with Machibela's question, I think the one concern that she raised is that our inspectors are always at school. I think it's for us, it's very, very important to identify all the training needs. Because we historically, unfortunately, because of the lack of skills within the mining industry as a whole, we tend to lose, or to have a high turnover, and we tended to lose substantial number of inspectors because we have the same qualifications that the mines are looking for. So it's very, very important that we should really continuously look at acquiring new inspectors and train them to the level of inspector that we will be comfortable with, to make sure that when they go to do an inspection, they do quality work. Because that's why we have a continuous, you know, training program to identify where we might need assistance. For instance, as I indicated, on risk management, and they should identify to be able to, if they go to the mines and do a risk assessment or evaluate risk assessment, then they clearly will know what issues to look at. I think that's the approach that we are taking. But I think in terms of training as well, as I indicated, the MQA will just indicate on what they are doing in terms of training and skills development within the industry. I think that will also assist in, you know, to ensure that we have enough pool of people that we need, and it might stop the, probably might reduce the turnover. And then the other question, the issue of housing at the mines, that you indicated. I think for us it has been a continuous drive through the SENEC program that has been run by the Department of Health. I think there are certain pillars to deal, for instance, with HIV and AIDS. And unfortunately, historically, our industry, especially the gold mines, the endoplasms, like they used to have this hostels. And now there has been a drive, especially to move to family units, rather than to have 8 people living in one hostel room. And through our social and labor plans as well, which is required in terms of the MPRDA, there is a requirement for the mines to make sure that the living out conditions are appropriate to deal with that. And I think the mines, normally when we deal with the issues of HIV and AIDS, they will say to us, how far are they? I mean, these are the questions that we'll ask. How far are you with housing? You know, we normally, they work together with the housing department and the relevant municipalities to make sure that they improve in this particular situation. And the contractors, the concern that you have on contractors, we acknowledge it, and we also have that challenge, but that concern. But the issue is, as I indicated, some contractors have certain special expertise that the mining people, that the normal mining people will not have, like sharp sinkers. It's a specialty. It's only a special group that can really do that particular work. But I think, and you are right, what is very, very important is that the health and safety management system for that mine or for that mining group should equally apply to the contractors as well. And I think that is the drive of the inspectorate as well, to make sure that whatever applies to the mine employees must apply to the contractors as well. There should not be a differentiation between the two. And Honorable Hululu, on the issue of the open cut mines, the open cut mines, they don't have serious accidents and occupational diseases compared to, let's say, the gold and platinum mines, because they are low risk mines, if I can call it like the medium risk mines. The only challenge the open cut mines have is maybe machinery, because they are more mechanized. The gold, platinum, they are more labor intensive, and they are very confined, and they are higher risk, given the depth and the other issues that goes with it. So you will not find, on the sets that I've shown you, most of the sets, probably about 70%, is for underground working on both, on all of them. The commodities is really for underground, because underground is more riskier than the open pit. The training is indicated at 1999. At 1999, this is a continuous process. Basically, it's for if let's say we say there's a module that they'll have to do with the vet university on inspection. Okay, for all let's say we have about 240 inspectors, right? We make sure that periodically we send those inspectors out for that particular training. They have to finish the module. All of those 95, 99. It's not an issue that they didn't do well then, but they had to finish their modules. And in terms of the foreign and the South African citizens, will look at this and I will try to provide you with the information as requested. And Honorable Schmidt, all the data that we have shown, it includes contractors. Also, even with the labor, it's contractors are included. The accidents and occupational diseases are contractors that are also included. And the occupational diseases for that period, those are the diseases that have been detected by the mine for 2009, basically. So on an annual basis, they will do that. And unfortunately, I must concede that some of the employees have to be medically boarded. But, before they do that, in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, there's a certain process that they have to follow. You look at the occupation, if let's say that the individual was a rock drill operator, okay, before you board that person, let's say he precipitates the cost, you must actually look at other occupations that you can place him in conjunction with his or her representatives. It can be a union. The mine must have a procedure in place to make sure that they go through and that they look. If they have to place him on surface, then they'll consider doing they are doing that. So that process that is being followed. The issue of the TV and the split, but I think the TB and HIV split, it becomes a bit challenging for us to really say we are going to be able to split it. It's going to be a challenge because of the issue that sometimes it might be caused by exposure to dust, which you are correctly saying, but now it becomes difficult to say when, let's say, a person is positive, then you can say how are you going to split it? Is it based on silica or not? Because at that time you'll find that maybe he has not been precipitated with silicosis, for instance. So it will be difficult for us really to try and split it. Hence the drive for us is to really to make sure that we drive down exposure and we make sure that there's effective HIV and AIDS programs to deal with this particular one. Probably I can even get our good doctor to respond more broadly on it.
Richard, can I just clarify on this point? No, what I was tra- understand the fact that it's going to be impossible to split the reports, but perhaps I should have used the word, we should report differently from the way it's been reported here, because it doesn't give a clear indication as to where your actual problem is. And you must remember that there were pulmonary TB cases long before HIV and AIDS came in mines that were there already. And some of the complications, especially in the older generation right now, is just solely pulmonary TB related. So what I'm trying to say is, if there are different types of TB, for example, let's report them differently. HIV and AIDS attached to TB, silicosis attached to TB, or whatever the case is, so that we are having a clear indication of where the underlying problem is. Because at the end of the day, we are in a state now that actually cures TB. So you will have those cases where you have treated people and they are cured, but you're not getting an indication of that.
You've made the point.
Thank you.
In terms of the training, the relevant training, with this particular issue, there is a process that we undergo of identifying the necessary training needs. That is internal within the inspectorate, and we work in conjunction with our HRD unit of the department, of our department. We have noted your request that probably they might be requested to come and just say, what are we doing? We do have our HRD program in place or plan that says to us in terms of buzzards, in terms of ensuring that we have a full-time inspector, or we train an inspector to be, you know, a fully qualified one. What process should we follow? But in terms of the industry itself, in terms of mine employees, I think we work together with the MQA, and probably they will touch on the programs that we do have. And again, the MQA does assist us with the training of our inspectors. You'll probably see with their presentation that they are also touching on that, on how are they assisting us in terms of that particular training. But I think I've noted the one of the requests of the HRD, and I'll just I'll arrange for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masiza. I know that there's an edge from your colleagues to respond to some areas. Keep it for now. You'll have a chance, perhaps when Mr. Masiza is not here. You'll have it all. We must thank you very much for that presentation and the clarification that we have given. Now, change the seats. What is good about MQA is that it seems as if members are not going to ask a lot of questions.
Don't leave that chairperson, please.
I think there are a lot of areas that would need clarity.
Honourable Chairperson, I'd just like to respectively ask a request for clarification, because our report has also been tabled for consideration, the annual report presentation. Yeah, the annual report, so I just wanted to get an indication. Okay.
just a mover and a seconder for the report as presented and clarified. Mr. Mare?
No, no, you press there. I want to record. You are going to Kanyela me next time.
I move. Dixie.
Okay, any seconder?
I second that the report be adopted, Shepherd.
You would have seconded because he's looking at you like, what? Thank you very much. The report is so adopted. Thank you.
Chairperson and members, I'm also the acting chairperson of the MQA. And
you are leading the presentation once again. Oh, get it on, man.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think I would like to also introduce our members, and also with a special introduction of our board members, Mr. Mabena and Mr. Tetebe. My colleagues that you see in front of me are the executives of the MQA. They'll introduce themselves. But today's presentation will be on the MQA 2009 and 10. Annual report. I must also indicate, Chairperson, that our state president has called for job creation, about 5 million, and there's been the new economic growth path, the state growth path that has been introduced last year, and there's a reviewed mining charter that was finalized last year. And as the MQA, we have considered all of these in the programs moving forward. And in fact, with our strategic planning and objectives, we've already considered that. And also the SSP, which is the sector skills plan, we've already considered this. And we've also discussed it with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and they've given guidance on what their expectations are on us. But without further ado, I'll just give my colleagues an opportunity to introduce themselves and go ahead with the presentation. I must also indicate that the CEO and the COO have been recently appointed. We have Mr. Sipei and we have Mr. Numad as well, who are just newly appointed. Thank you.
With my permission.
Thank you, Mr. Sila, and thank you, Chairperson. First, I want to express our thanks as MQA for the invite to come and make our presentation regarding our 2009-2010 annual report. And the intention of our presentation is to share with the Honorable Committee members our achievements, challenges, constraints that we experienced in that particular year, and also to zoom into the next 5 years as to what are the things that MQA will be engaged in. Mr. Chair, we intend to do our presentation in 3 phases. That will not be broken phases. They will just be smoothly running into each other. The first one will be the strategic part of it, where we will give an overview of issues that are related to our strategy and objectives. The second part of that will be on our operational staff, which Mr. Musila touched on, about the different programs that we're engaged in, and finally, it will be the last leg of what's next in the next 5 years. I will give Mr. Eunice Omar, our Chief Financial Officer, to kickstart the first part of our presentation. Over to Eunice.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. I'll try and be as brief as possible. So I'll shoot straight through into the presentation. If one looks at basically just to assist people where we come from, I think we have been established in terms of the Mine Health and Safety Act and also the Skills Development Act, hence we are CETA, and also through SAQA, the SAQA Act. However, quickly, just to reiterate, our vision obviously is we want to have a competent, healthy and safety workforce. So that's really what we need to. I'll skip over our values and our mission statement and go straight into our objectives. And so I think what is critical, if you look at our objectives, really we've got five objectives that we've come up with, the board and obviously executive management. And the first one we always looked at, in which is key for us, is transformation in the sector. Hence, this is really why we've been established, to transform the sector through skills development. The second objective really has been about health and safety, and I think the chairperson of the MQA board and also Chief Inspector Mines has talked about accidents and the environment that the miners work in, and we feel that we need to really address health and safety, training and development. Okay, and the third objective is really to develop a current workforce and to bring new entrants into the market. We've also got a further objective is we want to reskill employed and unemployed people so that they can sustain their employment. We want, the idea is to make people employable after mining and also to alleviate poverty so they can really fend for themselves. And the fifth one is really very important for us, is that we want to ensure that there's quality training out there. And we've actually got a special unit called the ETQA unit to make sure they monitor the quality of training. I just want to also run through how we really plan our business. What we've done is we look at on the screen there, we looked at our national and sectoral strategies. On the far left, we looked at our sector skills plan. We identify the skills needs. We look at our targets, the national skills targets and development strategy. We incorporate our mining charter. Our board looks at this, and we incorporate our five strategic objectives. Hence, we come up with a business plan, and the business plan, obviously, as you will see going forward now, with the next person come to present, tell you all the operational things that we do. And hence, that runs, and that's how we develop a budget. Yeah, in terms of our governance structure, we've got a tripartite board structure. We've got four members from the Department of Mineral Resources, five members from organized labor, and five from employer representatives. The chairperson, in terms of the Mine Health and Safety Act, is the Chief Inspector of Mines. So we don't have to nominate anybody. The Chief Inspector of Mines will always be our chairperson. We've got seven standing committees. We've got an audit committee, a remuneration, finance, SGB, skills research, learning programs committee, and education training quality assurance committee as well. In terms of governance, also what we try and do is we have annual declarations of interest from our members and board members and staff. So everybody's got to declare their interest. We've also got a fraud and corruption hotline, which is operational, which is independent, outsourced. If one looks at, and I just want to quickly touch on this, and I think the Chief Inspector of Mines raises, we've got around about, roughly, we had about 500,000 people in the mining industry, in the mining sector. Most of those people, you can see that 34% is in the platinum group metals, and 29% in gold mining, and the 13% in coal, and the others are really small, which touch on diamond mining, other classes, cement, lime, aggregates, and stone. Jewelry is very small, so that's really where most of the people are being employed. If one looks now at the profile of our sector, the bulk of the people are employed in the Northwest, 35%, Gauteng 19%, and the Mpumalanga 18%. If one looks at the Cape as a whole, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and Northern Cape, they only make up about 5% of the people employed in the mining sector. So it's just an overall picture of where people are employed. If we move over, and I think this slide also has been touched on by the Chief Inspector of Mines, I won't dwell on it. If one looks at where the top line there really is, the gold industry, in the 80s, We had more than 500,000 people employed there. That has dramatically dropped, and it's actually very close to the where the platinum industry is now touching on. So the platinum industry is starting to increase. All the other sectors have relatively remained flat. Okay. If we go there, what we've also done is we've just incorporated the mining charter. Excuse me. The NPA continues to focus on objectives of the mining charter. So all our learning and our training programs make sure that we take into account the objectives of the mining charter. For arguments, for instance, our programs, ABET, bursaries, interns, work experience, is also based around the human resources development strategy. So we fully integrate the mining charter objectives into our programs. Quickly touch on to finances. We received, if I look at the last column there, we received 572 million rand worth of revenue, and that's really made up of the skills levies of 542 million rand, and the 30 million rand is investment income, which is interest. What we've done is of that money, we've spent 612 million rand for the year, and that's broken down into 46 for admin expenditure. Mandatory grants, we've increased from 267 million to 308 million. Discretionary projects, we've increased from 171 million to 258 million. So our expenditure has really gone up quite a bit in terms of programs and grants and things like that. What we just to bring to your attention, administration expenditure, we've remained relatively flat, so there hasn't really been a big increase, although if you look at the admin income, it's gone up from 63 million to 67 million. We've just tried to make sure our expenditure within the organization remains flat. What we've also found is at the end of the year, we've had a deficit of 40 million. And what we've done is we've covered that by our reserves. We had reserves at the beginning of the year of 266 million. And after taking into account the 40 million, we had a surplus of 225 million. And that money really was to cover our commitments over the next 2 or 3 years. So we didn't really have too much money to play with at the end. Just to end off in terms of the finances, we've had an unqualified audit report. I just want to maybe touch on mandatory grants, levy income. With actually 91% of the money that we've received has been paid out in terms of mandatory grants. In terms of discretionary grants for the financial year, 190% of discretionary grants were disbursed, whereas only 20% of levy contributions were received. So we're spending more money now than what we've received for the financial year. And we've had about a 22 million rand on savings on admin funds. And what we normally do, any administration savings that we have on funds, we take that to discretionary grants for the next financial year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. My name is Jay Moodley, and I will be dealing with the operational aspect of our presentation for today. If we look at slide 12.
Gentlemen, it's COO. The earlier gentleman.
CFO.
CFO.
He's our chief financial officer, yes.
Right. And now?
I am the quality assurance manager at the NQA.
Okay.
Yes, I'm at the stage where we're looking at how we operationalize our strategies within the NQA. What we do have is a very simple value chain in order for us to ensure that our strategic objectives are actually realized at the end of the day, where we have learners achieving quality qualifications or standards. At the initial stage of our process, we have a research department that actually looks at pursue a research process identifying the specific skills needs that are there within the sector. And through this particular process, we also establish what we call our scarce and critical skills needs for the mining and mineral sector. Thereafter, we move on to the second stage of our process, and we have a specific department looking at ensuring that whatever skills needs we've identified, we have appropriate programs in place for them by either developing the qualifications ourselves or recognizing other qualifications that are already there on the National Qualifications Framework. We move along then to the delivery part of our processes, and within this particular area we have three departments within the MQA. One is actually called the Learning Programs Department. Then we have a department that looks at co-funding with the NSF, the National Skills Fund, and then we have a Projects Department that really gear themselves towards looking at occupations that need higher levels of qualifications within the mining and mineral sector. And finally, if we come to the last part of this process of ours, we look at the monitoring and evaluation of training providers in order that learners that get developed within the sector are achieving, like I've indicated before, quality qualification at the end of the day. I'd like to move on to slide 13, and if we look at the next few slides, what we deal with there is the different departments and the kinds of achievements that have occurred for the year under review. If we look at the Skills Planning and Research Department, that's the first phase of our value chain. We've really improved on receiving from organizations in the sector workplace skills plans and annual training reports. And these are instruments that are used that show us the kinds of scarce skills needs that are within our sector. In terms of standards generation, we also try to ensure that the qualifications framework that we've developed for the mining and mineral sector is available. That means all the components, like the unit standards and qualifications, are available for implementation. And we do this particular process with lots of interaction with subject matter expert groups called technical reference groups, and these are individuals from our mines that contribute ultimately to the makeup of the qualifications. If we move along to the implementation side of our programs, you will notice on the next slide we've given you an indication of our rural reach in terms of ensuring that we look at programs that are available for communities that are based within our mining areas are hence considered also rural. So we wanted to give you an indication of that. And moving along to slide 15, there are some stats available for you in terms of programs that we have for learners at the further education and training level. Most of our interventions in this particular level are run by what we call skills programs, which are actually mini qualifications, and then learnerships that ultimately lead to a whole qualification being achieved. On the first page, we're giving you statistics for employed learners that have achieved these programs, and the page following that is the one for unemployed learners. To sort of bring this down to the kinds of programs, the learnership programs that we have realize people like artisans or people like miners or jewelry manufacturers at the end of the day. So this is a combination of various occupations that learners would be able to fit into. If we move along then to, on slide 15, I also wanted to bring a further component in here. From the previous discussion with the DMR, the inspectorate, there's concerns around the falls of grounds incidents, and one of the programs or the skills programs that we run are really geared towards individuals learning around those particular items. So we have quite a nice pipeline in terms of achievements in that particular area. I will move on to slide 17. Adult basic education and training is still very critical for us as the NQA. We want to continuously improve in this particular area, and we set ourselves targets that continuously are increased from year to year. And just a special note on this particular slide is at ADEC level 4, our completions or the people achieving the qualification at ABIT level 4 was slightly low in the year under review, but that is when we've actually started our pipeline from ABIT 1. So in the next few years, we can see improvements in terms of the numbers in this area. I'd like to move on to the next slide, which really looks quite nicely at lots of occupational needs at the higher end of the national qualifications framework. And our projects unit or department at the MQA looks at supporting the sector in terms of the learning at the higher end of the scale, more specifically our tertiary studies that are needed. For instance, the bursary scheme that we've put in place looks at the development of learners for mechanical engineering, mineral survey, integrated environmental management, geologists, etc. Then over and above supporting individuals through the academic studies, we also award them work experience opportunities by getting them placed within mines in order to achieve their qualifications through work experience programs and internships. And that year, we also had a training voucher project where we looked at retrenched workers being skilled for occupations beyond the mining sector. Small-scale mining will receive our continued focus as we move along, and increased targets would be looked at there. We also look at getting our pipeline from the schooling process and our maths and science project. We have learners there as well, and that will, those numbers would increase as we move along. And finally, in terms of our value chain that I mentioned, we have the quality assurance area that looks at ensuring that there's training providers that are accredited to run the various programs that we have in place. And many of the interventions that are mentioned on that particular slide support training providers in achieving their deliverables. I'd like to make special emphasis or focus on the recognition of prior learning. We continue to engage in this particular area with the intention of ensuring that we have much more standardization in terms of implementation of the strategy of ours within the mining and mineral sector. Slide 21 talks about our stakeholder and community engagement forums. We have this on a yearly basis, and this one of the objectives, the rationales for this, is to ensure that we get more and more of our minds or organizations classified as minors into our net so that we are able to assist them with skills development opportunities. I want to then finally look at our performance as a CETA in the year under review, and the next two slides, 22 and 23, cover that particular area. If we look at slide 23, we need improvement to ensure that medium firms or medium minds, as they're termed, do actually submit their workplace skills plans to us in order for us to report and respond to their particular needs. So that is one area that we need improvement on as we move along as the MQA. I'm going to leave it up to my colleague, Mr. Sipai, to just talk to us about the challenges that we have faced in that year.
Thanks, Jay. There's a number of challenges in 2009-2010 in relation to our strategic objectives. And I think principal to that was that there are still transformational challenges in the sector, and this is really around getting numbers right, getting more people in positions that are not having enough representation, and we as MQA addressing that, which I will touch on our way forward. Accidents in the mines remain our concern, and in going forward, we also would like to see ourselves more involved with DMR, especially the inspectorate, and also with the Mine Health and Safety Council. The income decreased in the past financial year, and that resulted in a reduction in allocating learners for the learning programs. And we also had to reevaluate some of our projects and put others in abeyance until we could get more funding in the coming year. We also had challenges about the staff turnover. There was a time in the past financial year where we operated without a chief financial officer and the chief operating officer, and this in itself made us not to perform at our utmost best. Going forward, I think there's more stability and it's more bigger to go forward now that MQA has been reestablished as a CETA, and all the other things that we were not sure about what to do, how to set ourselves and position ourselves, we are now ready and eager to go for the next financial, for the next 5 years. The NSDS3 and mining charter support, we will implement NSD3 and support skills development in terms of mining charter as per the MS priority skills. This is our driving force, the National Skills Development Strategy, and we are going to make sure that all the relevant elements that are touching on MQA's day-to-day businesses are looked into. We are also aligning our strategy to make sure that our strategic objectives are in line with objective decision that will be informed by our research and also by enhancing our information management and knowledge. And this will also be part of our monitoring and evaluation and review processes to make sure that every time we are aligned and relevant. Transformation, our more focus will be on developing black managers, and as you are quite aware, especially through our mandate, ours is really to make more that we support and encourage that all the programs that are available, that our current the employees that are in the mining sector can have access to these programs, which will enhance their chances of getting promotion, of moving into the positions of managers. In terms of mine safety, 40,000 occupational health safety representatives and shop stewards will be trained in the next 5 years. already, we have already trained 10,000 people. Empowerment, we are quite aware that we don't have a lot of women in our programs, and our programs have been male dominated. But this trend is changing, because through our engagement, through our roadshows and exhibitions, more people are getting interested in our program, and we have more people coming on as the women coming on. Shared disability is still our big problem, because it's very difficult for the employers to be convinced that we can get more people because of their facilities, their state of their environment. And we as MQA, we have developed a disability and reasonable accommodation toolkit, which is now finalized, and we'll be running workshops with employers as to how they can use that tool to help them to have more people with disability on their programs. Recognition of prior learning is also a thing that will be getting more attention on our side. We were not very strong in the past because we did not have our own policy on this issue. When we approached the employers, it was like, what do you have in hand to can tell us? So now that we are armed, we believe that we'll be able to can tell them what is it that we actually mean by RPL, and how do we as MQA intend to influence them to make use of that, and also that we address the RPL, because to us it's really a very important component of increasing our skills level, and especially tapping into skills that are already there that need just recognition in terms of their qualifications. Career guidance, we are seeing this, we have made some good strides into communities, into young people's lives, where we have developed career guidance, and this has really found good and warm reception by the different people, different schools, different groupings, and we hope we will see the results in our coming programs, where people will be able to get have different varieties of career choices in the mining industry. Our qualifications are out for public comment. Sorry, all qualifications that were out for public comment have been finalized, and that has been done within the set time frames, and the effective implementation will take place in this current financial year, which will be reported later. I think literacy is our biggest problem, and as we are all quite aware, there is no improvement or there is no development or skills development that will take place unless we tackle illiteracy. And this is our cornerstone of all the development, and it is our priority in the MQA, because we are quite aware of the mammoth task that is lying ahead of us. The learner intakes, employers have been engaged and incentivized to take more people on our program of learnerships. And this is paying off because our numbers are increasing and we have more people that are coming forward, especially after our stakeholder engagements and forums. You get a lot of employers coming forward to engage us, make appointments with us, tell us about the facilities that they are having and how we can partner each other to increase the intakes of learners on the schemes. We piloted the maths and science program. And this is a very interesting thing, because much as we are governed by the Higher Education and Training Act, we're aware as MQA that there's no way that we are going to get people marching into our mining opportunities and learnerships unless we really go down and start preparing them at the high school. And that project, that pilot project of math and science, was such a success that we have decided that this should really continue. And we were initially operating in 5 provinces, and we have increased this to 8 provinces. And we hope, again, with more engagement, with more career guidance booklets given out, we'll have more intake on our bursaries, more intake on our programs. We have over 600 learners on our bursary scheme, and this intake is increasing. And this is a good sign for us, because we cannot alleviate poverty unless we have mass education and mass provision of skills to our young people. And hence we make a lot of appeal, we make a lot of noise to the young people when we gather with them to say, let's really go for this. We advocate for young people to start talking about opportunities in mining. And this really is seeing or is getting an effect in the number of bundles that we are having now. We, in terms of work experience and internships, we are increasing numbers and already have a 90% success rate. So all our learnerships are being taken very seriously. The supply chain, wasteful and fruitless expenditure. We have centralized procurement and tightened approval processes. And I think this has been informed by our previous experiences where we had some difficulty in the past. We are also having internal processes in place that have been tightened in terms of supply chain processes. And we also are operating strictly according to PFMA, and we have established a fraud hotline that is available for all the stakeholders that are related to MPA, and they can unanimously report on any fraudulent activities. And we are getting some participation from people. The audit report feedback, the Auditor General has given a favorable interim report for this current financial year. And we hope the final report will be similarly or not, if better improved than the interim report. The partnerships, we are continuing with the partnership with the FET College collaboration. And I think what is of interest here is the difficulty that we are facing, or the challenges that are there, which of course we will overcome, is to change the perception of the mining companies, their employers, about the quality of education that is coming out of the AFT colleges. So we are negotiating, we are talking with some other people that are aligned to the Department of Higher Education and Training as to have one or two pilot projects that will really help to improve the quality of the people that are coming out of the ET colleges and to improve also the quality of education there so that we can have more people that are coming out of FET colleges, because that is the seat of our artisan training. And then we are working on that. And we think next year this time we'll have more to report on the development and progress on the artisan through this collaboration. It is very important for us for going forward and especially addressing the skills shortage in the country. The new economic growth path, the chairperson has touched on that, and I would not repeat that because of time. The monitoring, our projects are being tracked and disbursements are monitored. We send a number of people out in teams to go and audit all our programs on site, audit the service providers, audit all the programs that had been carried out to see whether they've been done to the standards and whether they've been delivered. And also we monitor the people. We go to people to check whether people are trained as agreed with the service providers. So we make sure that we get value for our money. Taking of leadership achievements, this is a new challenge which I believe when we come and report for this current financial year, we'll have better and more convincing story to tell about where did they go, our learners. They have completed, what are they doing, so that we can really parade some of the achievements. So we are hard at work to ensure that we know about Thabo, Sibongile, where they are after all their involvement with us. The next few slides, I just like to share with the committee members about some of the achievements of the people on our programs. Chairperson, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the committee members, to thank the board of MQA, the conveners who really supported us throughout, and also the staff of MQA for making our success this as we presented to you. And I want to thank you and the honorable committee in advance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. like Ibutele is seemingly looking like dazed or something.
Looking like
he's got something.
That is a sparkle of the person.
The following slide. Next one.
Ah, there he is.
Oh, Lucky Boy. Lucky Boy was very, very, very phenomenal in charge. His performance was unbelievable, and whenever his achievements were read, it was like he was really in a dreamland, not really reacting at all. And you were wondering whether is this guy who got 100% out of some subject, and he didn't start to question whether really is this. But the guy is a genius, and it's really, we are going to parade him 4 years down the line chain as our success story.
Okay.
Yes. He's from Empangeni, KwaZulu-Natal.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks once more. Honorable members, this is a very, very good presentation. And if this presentation, if such an initiative cannot be linked with our constituency offices, we are missing it. My constituency office, come Friday, they have invited all the sitters and the unemployed youth. I wonder if you had an invitation. So that you don't concentrate in Khayelitsha, that is in New Cross Roads, KTC and Nyanga. That is the constituency. They are doing exactly what you have presented here. That is my administrator and another NPO that is busy trying to look at the plight of the youth in the area. So this is very, very good. You want to say I'm being opportunistic, eh? I will allow you to ask limited questions, honorable members. Limited questions, don't motivate. You just get into the question. Let me just correct. No. Praises should be put aside. I have, on your behalf, praised the program. And because I am your imbongi, take it from me. You saw what? Honorable member Fululu, I have recognized you. When you want to speak, you raise your hand, honorable members. Honorable Bigani, and that's the Lord. But I want to give you, Maria, I saw you writing. Oh, you'll talk for him, eh? Okay, thank you, members. Honorable member?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think we've got...
There's a lot of Mpumalanga there, I've seen.
We've got 3 minutes to go now. Let me thank also the presentation. I think it was a very good presentation. Only to say that on the first part, on the CFO's presentation, I think the numbers are not tallying there because the mine health and safety, they said the total number of employees in the mining industry is about 475,000. And then the MQA says there's about 551. So I don't know why the numbers are not telling there. That would be the first one. And the second one, it's on the learning programs. I see that Mpumalanga is well covered on the rural reach. But I see that a town like Barberton, which is very, very important, and it has got so many mines, it has been omitted there. I don't know whether it's deliberately or maybe you don't go there at all. And it's a mining town. It's a small town, and they mine gold and all that. I think you need to take that one into to venture into mining. Now, do they have to apply from the MQA for them to participate in the industry, or do they have to go to them, maybe work hand in glove with the department, and then look at the data that, okay, this company is going to be playing in the industry, and therefore we have to go to them to train them to in order for them to participate. How do you do that? I've got a million questions, but it's fine. Two questions are enough. Thank you very much. The comment, I'm not going to comment. Thank you.
Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The first question here is in relation to, they mentioned that they've got COOs and they've got CFOs. So the Honourable Member wanted to know.
Switch your phone off.
It's off, Chairperson. The Honourable Member next to me wanted to know if they have any UFOs. My second question, Chairperson, is in relation to. I don't even know what UFO is. But Chairperson, anyway, the person is for the young people. Now, you've already taken the words out of my mouth for your own constituency office. But on a serious note, I think for the sake of the committee, we'd really like to be interested in knowing if there can be any form of a meeting we can have to see if we can promote our constituency offices as well. Because I think the unemployment issue is affecting all of us. And if it was there specified what were the pilot areas, then it will give an indication, for example, if I'm from the Free State, of where do we stand and try and get that information. But we might find a situation that we also have learners in rural areas who've already gone into bursaries for engineering and whatever else in mining, and it's just a matter of them perhaps being allocated work or internships at the end of it. If perhaps that can also be strategized such that we all benefit, Chairperson, and not only you. And then the third one is...
I can only say amen.
Sorry, Chair?
I can only say amen.
Okay. The other question, we once had an issue, I think in our last year's budget vote, where we were actually concerned about the fact that you find a mining area, but the local university does not offer subjects in relation to that mining area. So I was just wondering if the effort of the FET colleges, is it trying to close that gap, or is it also an individual area that they can look into to see if there can be any programs put in place for relevant mining areas with local universities to offer those subjects, and efforts be made in relation to funding for those areas. And then, looking at the achievements there, Chairperson, it's the last one, the third question, the last one, Chairperson. You said only three.
Limited.
Limited is three, Chairperson.
No.
Nice, but it's the last one. Limited. Chairperson, I wanted to know if, you know, sometimes what they've presented here to us, at least, is an eye-opener. And honestly, I don't easily get satisfied, but I'm more than satisfied with what I've received. I don't even think I want the HRMND to come anymore. But what I wanted to say is it possible for preferably the department and DMR, as well as the MQA, to sometimes invite us as a committee on such functions of achievement, because then it gives you a better picture of what is really going on and where do we need to support in terms of areas of improvement within our own constituencies. You just see this picture, and when you see the picture, it's only then that you realize that you actually are doing something. There's not enough advocacy on your achievement. So as a result, you find that when you come here, we look as if we're at war with each other. And this is also actually an improvement in the state of life, quality of life of our own people, and yet it's not yet visible, because it's quite a significant number that was presented here in terms of achievement.
That's a long question. Huh?
It was just a comment, I think, the statement.
Yeah.
Chairperson, you cannot shut me out, please.
You never raised your hand.
No,
Mama.
But you said no comment. No comments, says so to me. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, MTA, for the wonderful presentation. And because I saw here, I was going to ask you a question about the rural areas. Because I'm not sure about the year that we had three students who were interviewed and two managed to get into MTA, education list. But here now I'm happy because here I see we've got Bembe, it's Limpopo, and Sekhukhune, FET colleges. Then I'm definitely sure that this I will sell in my constituency because it is my region, Sekhukhune, so that kids will be able to go there to do something. Thank you very much.
When the cat was away, the mice were playing.
Thank you very much. Whilst I am handing over back to the chairperson, I am giving you an opportunity to respond. And take the accolades that you receive.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'll just respond to the first one that requires clarity on the discrepancies in terms of labour. I think if you can consider our presentation, we've specifically indicated that persons at work, and this is the total. I mean, if you look at the presentation by MQA, is that people who are employed at the mines, and including people in processing, jewel manufacturing and service incidental too. So hence the discrepancy as well in terms of the numbers. I'll just give the my colleagues an opportunity to respond to the other ones.
Honorable Lulu, on the issue of the Barberton, why is it not there? We operate nationally, and the only way that we do the names that you see on a rural ridge, they are not the only names. They are our current names in that financial year. So we go throughout the country. We change focus every year, meaning that areas like Barberton, areas like Phalaborwa, all the other areas will be also visited. It's only that they were not here in this term. And I think that effectively also it answers about the promotion of constituencies that was asked to say, how can we get our constituencies also to benefit from that? I think on the same principle, we will be going throughout the country. And we also are open to invitations by the different communities and also by the different mining houses to say, come and have a roadshow at our area. So if we get such invites, even if they are not on our schedule, we jump on the opportunity and we go and present and engage those communities. About the BEE, Jay would like to answer that.
Thank you, Sam. In terms of the process that's in place, if a BEE company is registered, there is an allocation process in place through SARS, where allocation to a specific CETA based on the application would be made. So if that company is allocated to the MQA, it would be on our list of registered organizations for us to then take the dialogue forward with that specific organization. In terms of the issue around the FET colleges or partnerships with the FET colleges in mining areas, I think it's an area of dialogue for us to get into, and obviously at this stage we're looking at artists and development jointly with the FET colleges. At this stage we do not foresee them, and they would not be able to handle the higher education level qualifications that are needed, which the universities would still have to handle. So I suppose we need to keep our eye open on the two new universities that are being envisaged for the country in the areas where there's lack of that. And I think in terms of the comment on not enough advocacy, we appreciate that comment, and we can look at ways of engaging further with constituencies. Thanks.
I just want to add on that and just wrap it up. I think the day that we'll really feel successful and on cloud nine as MQA is the day when we hear a lot of South Africans talking about MQA, people to be advocates, not newspaper adverts, not editorials, but people having felt the impact of MQA. So we will take this opportunity really to make sure that we invite as many as people in different areas where we have launches, award ceremonies, to come and grace our occasions. And I think that way, through you and our members, people can start to identify with development and to see their role models in action. We'll definitely welcome that and we'll consider it very, very strongly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Friday is the day. Can I get your...
thank you very much. I would take it that those were the questions that were asked, and I don't want to take you back. Just one question, one special question that has been bothering me. Have you been able to identify and quantify skills required in the industry? Is there a process? If this question has been answered, asked or answered somewhere, it's fine. But others, I will communicate with yourselves to satisfy myself. Just this one.
Mr. Chair, on the basis of our process of submission of workplace skills plans, it's expected that all organizations classified as mines and the other subsectors that we busy with, like jewelry manufacturing, do report their needs to us on an annual basis. So that is where we take our, get our data from, and that's what we respond to. On an annual basis, our expectation, and it's included within the Mine Health and Safety Act as well, that organizations must submit a workplace skills plan to us. So on the basis of our analysis of these workplace skills plans, that is the data in terms of the quantities of different types of learning that is required that we respond to.
That's fine. Because we have extended this invitation to you without you tabling your annual report to us, I think we will need Baba to clarify these reporting lines. We still believe that MQA is a responsibility of DMR, and I don't know if you are responsibilities also to the education of higher learning in terms of the skills work that you are involved in. But I think that would have to be clarified. We would expect of you, because in the MPRDA, I don't know if you are mentioning that in your reports, you are created, established in terms of the MPRDA. And therefore, going forward, we would expect that we do get your annual report and that we entertain it, and that also periodically from time to time when we deal with matters of skills development, we would indeed invite you. I don't know if you are clear in your own minds that you are accountable to this portfolio committee. You are. Very well. that you have dealt exhaustively with this MQA report. Can we ask for adoption? If you are, yes, Honourable.
Chairperson, I definitely support that you adopt the report.
Seconded by Honourable Marais. Can I therefore put to you all the reports from the first one, which was what was it again? You had Geosciences Council, MinTech, Diamond, the regulators. You had the Miners and Safety Council. You had PASA. You now had MQA. Is there any reason why we should not all collectively accept as we did individually?
No, Chairperson.
There is none.
None.
Okay. You would note that we were going to deal with another case report, but apparently time is heavily against us. But what I want to do, because we're not going to meet now before the oversight report, I'm going to give you briefing on the oversight visit so that we leave here being ready. But first, let us thank you very much, the MQA, and indeed, as I indicated, we will communicate going forward. That goes for also Manhattan and Safety Inspector. This is a subject closer to my heart. In your report, I had a lot of dots and crisscrosses, but I missed that opportunity. I will engage you at a later stage. Thank you very much for having briefed us and set the time aside. Now, in terms of this, we are leaving on the 29th. We would be landing in Johannesburg on the 29th, and we would be staying, what is this hotel? At OR Tambo Airport, but we'll go there at different times. The ANC component knows that they must be there at 10. 10 a.m., all ANC members must be landing there because there's an engagement that we've set aside for you whilst you are there. Then we will be then going to the banquet hall in Mirafong in Carltonville on Wednesday the 30th. Then we will be in the number one Fall River Community Hall on Thursday the 31st. All these public hearings will be taking place at 2 o'clock. Please, we have said when we left here that we need to have at least 3 or 4 sets of documents. One is the mining charter review report by DMR. The second one is the amended mining charter. The third one is the old mining charter, which has got, you know, annexures such as the housing and living standards and the code of good practice. And then the fourth one will be the MPRDA itself as amended, the 2002 Act as amended, because there will be cross-references in the process of those public hearings. We have asked that people who are going to participate, some of them would address us. For instance, there are individual companies that would make presentations. There are individual members of society that would make presentations, but also would open the floor for general public to then engage us on their own views in relation to this matter. Now, we would then be returning on the 1st of April. Now, indeed, again, the members of the ANC within this portfolio committee would leave later on the 1st instead of early. We would leave at about 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock thereabouts. Indeed. So, what is this? What is this for? Are they confirming? Oh, for the afternoon. Okay. You see, Pazundi Eva Dibala dismisses. important matter, honorable members, you would remember that we have engaged a Chamber of Mines. They invited us to a lunch, and in our interaction with them, we have raised issues with them. Of course, there's a public discourse about nationalization of mines. They have some views. We are handling the issues of state-owned mining companies, and we wanted also, we solicited their views on the issue. We spoke about the matter of the State of the Nation address, where the President has made an impassioned plea for job creation. We asked them, what is their take, and what kind of contribution are they going to make in as far as that is concerned. So they wanted to meet us on Friday, and you since agreed that they can meet us on Friday. They would be having lunch with us from 12:30 to 13:30. There will be a lunch hour, and then immediately after that, we will get into the roundtable discussion. And you can pose your question, Honorable Sonde, in terms of going to the jazz immediately after that, so that they must be on the spot. If they didn't make contingency plans, then they will have to. It's starting in the evening of the 21st. So we will be in good time for the jazz, because we will engage them here in Cape Town, and the jazz is here in Cape Town. They are coming here. No, I'm saying that there is, on Friday the 21st, from 12:30, we will be having lunch with the Chamber of Mines. No, jazz is starting in the afternoon. It starts at 6, jazz, 6 p.m. Yeah. So we will be engaging them. And one of the reasons why we call them on that day is precisely to say to them, from here, we are moving to the jazz. We must just, whether they've made provisions or not, it's up to them. You see, but they must take the... Absolutely. No. They must provide the what you call. So, in fact, they've just sent us the letter of confirmation yesterday, 22nd of April, 22nd of March, to confirm that they are meeting us on Friday. So, please, honorable members, let us be present. Nolchando here will remind us once again in terms of this arrangement. And then I hope, but did you make an undertaking as MQA that you are going to take members to the jazz? You're running away, eh? Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.